Thank you very much, Minister Kieran Cannon, who I hope you'll agree anyway, is someone who is taking his role in terms of connecting Ireland with Irish communities here hugely seriously, both from a science and data perspective, which is very much what Kieran brings, but also from an emotional perspective as well. Coming from the west of Ireland, having family here, relating to many of the stories that that so many of you, I'm sure, share also. Senator Billy Lawless, who's a friend of mine. I was in school, actually, with Billy's son, Billy Jr. We were in boarding school together. And someone who is doing extraordinary work in Ireland for the interests of Irish America. And he is one of the first in the Irish Senate, to actually do that, and is really has been somebody who has changed the political perspectives in terms of the aspirations and the connectivity that's needed between political decision making in Ireland and many of the concerns that you have here. And it's great to see Billy here. We have a new team over here. There's a new foreign minister. There's a new minister for Irish America. We have a new ambassador, Dan Mulhall, and his wife, Greta, who's here. We have Kieran Madden, who's a new representative here in New York. Kieran was joking about me coming from the second largest English-speaking city in the European Union. I tried to persuade Kieran actually to stay in Dublin. He was for a little bit longer. We have real Irish interests in the Middle East peace process at the moment. And Kieran headed up the Middle East team. But when I came over actually and saw his office here, I understood why he wouldn't say. You know, Ramallah or here. It was a bit of a no-brainer, but you know, he's doing it for his country. I want to also welcome the police commissioner here, Jim O'Neill. Can I say that I have met a lot of NYPD. In fact, I make a point of speaking to a lot of the police officers here, because so many of them are Irish, and when they hear an Irish accent, they often smile, and you get a sense of the New York wit here, which is great. I was disassembling an umbrella behind two police officers in an elevator yesterday, and I could see them getting a bit twitchy because there was a lot of clicks behind them. It was actually at a drinks for President Trump, so there was just a lot of people on edge. So I, with an Irish accent, so I said, "Don't worry, guys, it's an umbrella." And one of them turned around and said, "You know, those Irish umbrellas can be very dangerous." So it was whenever you're in New York, you just meet Irish people everywhere you go. This is an amazing city. I've been here many times. Some emotional times, actually, here for me, too. And every time I come back and I have a privilege to meet the Irish community when they get together like this, fills me with a lot of pride in terms of what our country contributes still to life all over the world and to the great cities, not only of America, but to so many other capitals across the world as well. And tonight is no different. The musicians you'll hear later on, the dancers you'll see, the business people you'll meet, the community workers that are represented here in terms of looking after Irish people, bringing them together, finding reasons to create fun and to create business opportunities and places to meet, whether that be GAA clubs, whether it be in pubs or restaurants, whether it be in businesses, helping people to find employment here, whether it be people who fall on hard times. Irish people look after each other, and there is no better example of that than an Irish American. And we need to help you do that, because we are not, as Kieran said, a people that are confined to an island in the Atlantic. We are a people that have spread all over the world, from 200,000 people in Buenos Aires to millions of people in the United States. and so many other countries. And we are, as a government now, trying to figure out how we can create the connections that make that a more powerful relationship in the future, that actually helps a new generation of Irish America to make their mark, not only in terms of their Irishness, but make their mark on the future of this great country too, as so many Irish Americans have done in the past. And I think, you know, when you look at the significance of this week, when the world comes to New York, there's 193 countries in the UN, about 150 prime ministers or foreign ministers are here this week, and enjoying the international city that is New York, talking together, challenging each other about how we together as an international community can help solve some of the tragedies that the United Nations has a responsibility to find answers for around the world. And Irish voices will be part of that discussion, as they are, not only on the Irish delegations, but also in the US team and other countries too, that have Irish speechwriters, that have Irish advisors, and so on. And it's amazing that a country of such a small geographical presence has this enormous footprint in terms of influence and opinion across the globe, which has been so evident to me this week at a political level, but also with gatherings like this one. So as a foreign minister, it's my first time in the US, and it fills me with an extraordinary amount of pride that all of you have taken the time to be here, despite the traffic this week in New York, which is a nightmare for all of you, I'm sure. It makes no difference to me, wandering around the streets. But for people whose businesses and whose normal travel plans are interrupted, my understanding, in particular for the police here, is that this is a difficult week. Actually, Jim O'Neill said to me, well, the Pope was here a few years ago, at least it's not the Pope. So now that was really difficult. So can I also welcome Senator Golden, State Senator, who has joined us this evening. Thank you. Thank you for coming. We're going to have the Lieutenant Governor also, I think, will join us, Kathy, later on. So this is a really super gathering. Kieran has spoken a lot about what we as a government want to do with you in partnership in the future. I'd like to just talk for a few minutes about your country and where it's at right now, because there is a lot to be proud of. I remember being in the States 6 or 7 years ago, and a lot of people were looking to their home country in horror at what was happening. Our economy was imploding. We were again relying on many countries to provide employment for young Irish people having to leave, coming to the US, to Canada, to Australia, and so and further afield. And now, this year, our country will be the fastest growing economy in the European Union for the fourth year running. We have gone from unemployment of just under 16%, which probably would have been over 20% if it hadn't been for the release valve of immigration, to now virtually, as Kieran said, full employment. We're at about 6% now and falling, which is now below the European average. Considering where we were 5 or 6 years ago, that is an extraordinary transition, that none of the other countries that have had the sort of depths of financial crisis that we have come anywhere close to. And that is because of a pragmatic approach in Ireland, both from politics and from people, that have put up with tough decisions that we have had to take in government to fix things so that we are would not accept the kind of generational debt burden that was being transferred from one generation to another, and that we would try to build an economy that could solve that again. And that has taken a lot of hard work and some unpopular decisions, but we are now benefiting from that. Before the end of the year, Ireland will launch a new capital investment programme, dramatically increasing capital expenditure in Ireland on hospitals, schools, roads, the kind of thing that you can do in a sustainable, sensible way on the back of a growing, strong economy. But that was just unthinkable 4 or 5 years ago. And so we are working to rebuild your country. Having seen mistakes that were political and financial in Ireland that many people have suffered because of, and many people are in this room tonight, those of you of a younger generation, ended up here because of those mistakes. And we want to make sure that in the future, if people want to come to the United States, they can come here out of choice rather than out of necessity. They can come here for adventure rather than necessity. So we're in a good place. And I think it's important to recognize that and the journey that's taken to get there. That's not to say that everything's okay, though, because it's not. And when you're a politician, just when you think you're getting on top of things, some new huge problem tends to emerge out of left field. And we have two big challenges in Ireland at the moment that I know you will be very interested in. First of all is Northern Ireland. The peace process, and I know many of you who are here are from counties in Northern Ireland. We have had no devolved government structure in Northern Ireland since the start of the year. That's 9 months. That situation is not sustainable for much longer. I've spent a lot of time this summer in Belfast and in Derry talking to primarily the DUP and Sinn Féin, who are the two parties that need to get a deal done here to make sure that we can put a governance structure in place consistent with the Good Friday Agreement so that we can ensure that the peace process that so many people have given so much to achieve can actually be maintained into the future. The alternative to that is a gradual move towards Westminster taking more control of Northern Ireland in the absence of an alternative, which is a nightmare scenario of a move towards direct rule where Northern Ireland and key decisions in Northern Ireland would be taken outside of that country. And we cannot allow that to happen. What I want to say to many of you who have influence and have friends in Northern Ireland and in the political parties there, now is the time to use that friendship and that influence to encourage them and the new leadership that has emerged in political parties in Northern Ireland. In the SDLP, Colm Eastwood, Arlene Foster in the DUP, Michelle O'Neill in the SDLP. These are a new generation of leader in Northern Ireland. And they need to be willing to take risk, like the leaders that came before them, for peace. And my job is to encourage them and support them and help them do that, and to shelter them from the criticism when they do. And we will do that with them, and with James Brokenshire, who is the British government's representative in Northern Ireland. And that is what we are trying to do at the moment, and we are making progress. But there are some key issues that still need to be resolved. And actually, the point of difference between two very different parties in the DUP and Sinn Féin are not that wide now. But they are difficult political issues to resolve because their base support are very, very apart on these issues. Because we've had two very difficult and divisive and pretty nasty elections in Northern Ireland at the start of the summer. One in terms of Westminster elections and the other Assembly elections. And the dominance of those two parties was reinforced and communities have moved to more extreme positions because of that, because of the feeling of threat from the other in Northern Ireland, which is always what people like me and others need to try to ease and dissolve over time. And that is the strength of the peace process. And so we will work night and day to move mountains if necessary to avoid the prospect of any glide path or move towards direct rule in Northern Ireland that, of course, the Irish government would have to be involved in, given our responsibilities in the Good Friday Agreement around North-South bodies and so on. But that is not where we want to be. We do not want decisions being made for people in Northern Ireland, in Dublin and London. We want the decisions being made in Derry and Belfast and all of the other counties through direct directly elected democratic members of the Assembly and a functioning executive with all parties involved. And we will work, as I know you would expect me to try to make that happen in the coming weeks. The second challenge is one that is not of our making in Ireland, but unfortunately Britain as a whole voted for, which is the decision that Britain has taken to leave the European Union. Let me tell you that that is not a decision that just affects the United Kingdom. It has a deep impact on Ireland too, and on many other countries in the European Union, but in particular Ireland. And one of my jobs as minister is to coordinate the government's response to the negotiation around Brexit, to defend Irish interests, to defend the peace process, to ensure that the 65 billion euro trade relationship, billion euro trade relationship between Ireland and the UK each year, which is more than 1.3 billion a week, is maintained. About 10% of people working in Ireland have their jobs because of that relationship. And so this is a hugely serious challenge for us. We are trying to encourage an evolving debate within the United Kingdom that can ease some of those concerns, whereby Britain may stay as part of a customs union and closely connected with an economic single market within the European Union, which would mean that there would be no need for any customs checks on the island of Ireland. And so the linkage between a stable peace process, economic activity, and the political relationship between Ireland and Britain, and the political relationship between Ireland, Britain, and the European Union, creates a hugely complex challenge that, depending on whether you are debating Brexit in Brussels, Dublin, Belfast, or London, has a very different slant to it. And the technicalities around that are very complicated. But they can be actually dumbed down into some pretty simple principles. We are not going to allow 30 years of progress in terms of a peace process on the island of Ireland be undermined by Britain leaving the European Union. Period. And the British government accepts that. The EU negotiating team accepts that too. The big challenge is, how do we figure out a way of making sure that that is so? And secondary to that, from my view, is the economic arguments, which are hugely important in terms of people's lives as well. But peace process comes first for me. And we cannot and will not ever allow a physical border to be built again on the island of Ireland that is 500 kilometres away. Irish people and Northern Irish people will not accept that, whether they're unionist or nationalist or Republican or whatever community they come from. The sense of normality that a peace process has delivered on the island of Ireland, where farmers move, livestock moves, people move. When you drive between Dublin and Belfast now, you don't even know when you're crossing the border. And so when I talk about this in Brussels, I talk about the invisible border on the island of Ireland. Yes, it's a border. Yes, Northern Ireland is part of Britain. And until that changes under the Good Friday Agreement structures, if it changes, and I have, you know, an aspiration that someday it will, but we will continue to have a border. But we need to make sure that it is as seamless and as invisible as it is today, while at the same time respecting that Northern Ireland may leave the European Union. And the only way that we can achieve that is if Northern Ireland, or Britain as a whole, remains as part of a customs union and a single market with common standards around regulation and so on, so we have no need for checks or cameras or scanning systems or anything else that actually people will simply not accept on the 260 road crossings along that 500 kilometre border. So that's where we're at. And believe it or not, actually, the negotiation between Britain and the European Union and all that that entails around Brexit is actually revolving around Ireland and Irish border issues probably more than anything else at the moment, which from my perspective is hugely reassuring that the European Union as a collective is looking after the interests of a small country like Ireland, as one of the key priorities in the context of the negotiation around Brexit. And I think that that is a reassurance, if ever we needed it, that membership of the European Union for Ireland is of fundamental importance to our future. Great. The Lieutenant Governor has arrived, so wherever she is, you're very welcome. Thank you. Thank you for being here, Cathy. We really appreciate it. So look, as you can tell, I'm pretty passionate about this issue. I regard Britain as a friend, but friends need to be honest with each other when proposals are simply not gonna work. And we are having that straight, honest discussion at the moment between the two governments. And of course, we are working through the EU negotiating team to try and get an outcome. So I know you're watching from afar here in some ways, but this really matters in the context of what Ireland looks like in the future, north and south. And we are going to find a way through here that protects that all-Ireland relationship, while at the same time respecting the diversity in Northern Ireland that is made up of unionism and nationalism. Because that is a part of Ireland too. And we need to try to respect that. So Ireland is, as usual, facing challenges. But I think we're in good shape to face those challenges. A strong, growing economy, a young, talented, well-educated workforce, a country that is investing in the future, a country that wants to reach out to Irish people all over the world and encourage people to come home, if that's what you want to do. And if you want to stay here, we want to continue to support what you're doing here too. One of the projects I've been involved in with Billy and with Kieran is to actually introduce some new tangible measures that actually solidify that connection between Ireland at home and Ireland abroad. And that will be to extend voting rights for presidential elections in the future to every Irish person who wants to do that. And it simply isn't possible to do that for next year's presidential election, but all presidential elections after that will involve every Irish person who wants to be on a voting register to vote in presidential elections to be able to do so. And that means that the Irish president and his or her role in the future will change. They won't simply be representing the island of Ireland or the Republic of Ireland per se. They will be representing Ireland as a nation, north and south, east and west, all over the world. Some people who mightn't even speak English as their first language. Many who speak Irish as their first language, of course, but some who may be speaking Spanish or French. And in my view, it will change the role of an Irish president in a hugely positive way and create a connection and a connectivity between that office. And I hope many of you and the communities that you're part of in a way that helps to actually pull us all together as a global tribe, if you like. And I am determined to deliver that, and the Taoiseach is with me on it. And we will agree the detail along with Billy and many others who are advising us on it in the not-too-distant future. So look, I'm conscious I've been speaking for quite a long time. Thanks be to God, the air conditioning came back on. It was getting a bit warm in here. But look, real privilege to be here. This is a special gathering. For all of you, continue to be proud of who you are and where you come from, because that is really at the core of what Irish people and Irish values and Irish communities are about, supporting each other and remembering where you come from and its history, with all of the pain and joy that history entails. It's a powerful, powerful story that we need to keep telling.